Hello, and welcome to the Mondays on Tuesdays podcast. I have been your host, Firecrow Silver Knight, and I have an episode today that I have been thinking about how to present for quite a while. I want to talk about gender issues, and I couldn't figure out quite how to do it. And I waited long enough that I can now rope it in with me coming out of the closet as a trans feminine woman. It will be a while before I present as anything other than what appears to be a very elegant cis white man, but I'm in the very early stages of planning and allowing myself to be more feminine with the intention of completely switching over to being a woman one day. And I want to talk about all sides of gender as I've seen them, and it's been tricky to find out exactly what to say, partly because it was obviously a trigger issue for me before I realized why for a while. Probably the most convincing step in me accepting and realizing that I was in fact trans feminine was an argument I had on LinkedIn. Everything these days starts with an argument on LinkedIn. And I brought up testosterone in terms of how frustrating it is to have so much of it in my mind. And what I was trying to say was basically that it's not an understandable thing how angry that can make you. And it got placed in the category of men are better because we have testosterone, and that's how it was received, and all the responses were like, oh, you shouldn't say that, and you're backwards, or whatever. So I realized it was a dumb thing to say in the beginning, and it was deleted by me, but that's probably about a year or two ago, set me on this rabbit hole of like, you know, I know a lot of the things that I know about gender is true. For example, women are buying cars and houses as single people, if you don't consider couples, in much higher numbers. They're killing themselves in much lower numbers compared to men. They're both applying to, being accepted, and graduating from college. And I have a very simple theory as to why this is. And I'll go into that after the break, but I want to introduce this topic as something that I have always championed, being the middle child of two brothers, which is those who walk down the middle of the road tend to get hit from both sides. And that's been true in many aspects of my life, but what happens here is I think there are a lot of women's rights activists who have misunderstood the idea of living up to the demands of men as opposed to civil rights, right? Like, anyone who thinks that shaving your legs is against the cause of women's liberation, I think has greatly misunderstood that civil rights should apply to you whether you do or don't shave your legs, no matter what gender you're from. And I think this means there's an aversion within the feminist movement to identifying the difference between men and women in the first place. And I don't have the luxury of pretending there's no difference, because I wouldn't be switching from male to female if I didn't think there was a difference. And I believe very strongly in women's rights. I don't consider that a cause for myself. I think I may someday, when I fully transition to be a woman, consider it a cause for myself, but I'm trying to explain just before the break the idea that what I'm going to talk about here today likely will explain some things that I've been dealing with, maybe the world has been dealing with, but it might not sit well with a variety of groups. Because the people who really want to define what it means to be a woman either have really backwards views and want women to have a job but never a job that would compete with a man, which is horrible, or they want to not define what a woman is so that there's no judgment against women. And I'm here in the middle of like, well, you know, I have been really, really hurt by needing to conform to what it means to be a man. And so I don't have a choice of ignoring that there's a difference. And so I'll try to explain a little bit of what that is and a little bit of a lens for how I perceive transgender issues today. So I'll start with the likely ridiculously naive idea of defining men and women on a podcast on the internet, which gee, what could go wrong? But I have a fairly concise definition, which is the masculine mindset is simplicity first, the feminine mindset is complexity first. And if you take simplicity and complexity as ingredients you need in everything, let's take a dish for example. If you have, pasta and meatballs, you need a relatively complex flavor in either the sauce with a variety of spices or in the meatball itself with a variety of ingredients in the meatball. If you don't have that complexity, the simplicity of the tomato flavor is just not going to taste good. And I think that's true of every dish, actually. If you look at your favorite dishes, pizza, the complexity is probably in the pepperoni. Miso, the complexity is probably in the broth. Or sorry, like a miso ramen, the complexity is probably in the broth. And then the simplicity is going to be in potentially the noodles or the simplicity of the spicy of the vegetables, so they can be like, a character that supports the broth. And you'll find this in every aspect of life. In a company, if it has a large variety of products, it needs to change those products less often so that it can do the variety well. So you have this kind of mix of simplicity and complexity everywhere. It's just that I believe masculinity and generally men are simplicity first, and femininity and women are generally complexity first. So men's simplicity, women complexity. That's actually the lens I see everything through in terms of gender. And if you're a real simple dude, the term I have for this lately that I quite like is a burly dude. Probably for the first time in my entire life, I can respect you for that. Because it has been so painful to realize that I will never be the kind of man who is okay just talking about a sports game. Or, listening to someone's story and being supportive and not really getting into, 15 different personal reflections or a variety of perspectives on it. And when I've done that with a group of men, they've all kind of been like, huh? They just wanna, talk about what they're talking about in a pretty simple way. And this is not to be mixed with a lack of intelligence. Simplicity is incredibly deep and necessary. Ironically, I actually can't relate that much to it. But when I would have that exact same interaction with a group of women where someone would say something, talk about something, it would inevitably land on a variety of discussions and reflections about personal experience, some about vulnerability, some not. And I would be able to carry on these conversations very easily. Like in public, I tend to have more interesting conversations with women than with men, at a party where I don't know people really well. And for a while, I just believed, oh, I have a feminine communication style. That's enough. I could live as like a cisgender white dude. It's fine. And then memory started coming back. Things like a time when I was just so happy to paint my nails with a bunch of teenage girls. I was a teenager as well at the time. It's kind of sad that I have to give that as a caveat these days, given how common it is for people to reach below the line like jackasses. Anyway, so I about 14 years old, I was at a friend of mine's house with another friend of mine. The other friend was a young man. I was a young man. There were two young women there. And one of the young women started joking with my friend, the other young man, hey, do you want me to paint your nails? And I was like, you can paint my nails. And they were like being flirty about it and like joking about it, but I was serious. I was like, no, I really want you to paint my And so I came home with like bright red nail polish or something like that. And there was someone around that time who told me something that I did not forget, which was they said it was only cool to have painted nails if a young woman painted them for me, that it wasn't cool for me to paint them myself. So, I learned the message was received, stay in your lane, and I did for another 30 years. Now, I am immensely privileged in that I've been able to be a pretty femmy dude. I cry a lot. always have. I mastered the silent cry on the New York City subway. And it's good for me. It gets my emotions out, and I feel much better afterwards. And this is a really interesting thing about the difference between men and women. I used to believe that the world would be a better place if men cried more often. You know, there's this thing of like, oh, I saw my father cry once, and, you know, isn't that a travesty? It might be, but it might not be. It might actually be that the complexity of women's emotions makes crying a helpful thing, whereas the simplicity of male emotions makes crying a good idea to be a once in a while thing. And what I see in the workplace in terms of gender is the idea that given the complexity first mindset of women, they are more likely to not wave something around until it's ready, meaning they're less likely to ask for a raise until they're ready. Now, this has been criticized extensively of, oh, women got to stand up for themselves. And usually when I hear that story, I'm like, well, yes, but should they boastfully exaggerate their skills in a completely dishonest way, the way that men do, just because that's the business culture we have? Or is it a real strength to have the female lens of complexity and have a deeper knowledge of what you are and are not capable for, and what is reasonable and not reasonable to ask for? And I don't know if this is a feather in the transfeminine cap, but I have actually never in my life asked for a raise. I've also accepted the first job I've always been offered. And I'm also very good at understanding team dynamics. So when I look at the idea that men are simplicity first, they do seem more likely to finish what they start, but that can be a tremendous liability. They seem far more likely to need to finish what they start, even if they know it's not worth finishing. And so we do live in this time of capitalism where it's basically like things don't have to be of high quality. It's an expected asset that's expected to decline in value. And so teamwork has been undervalued, because it's not that interesting to owners who'd rather be playing golf if you have figured out a way to make the company work better than before. It's just important that you keep it going. And in a keep it going capitalist mindset, there is more use for masculine mentality. In reality, there is more use for feminine mentality, which is the complexity of the situation is met with the complexity of the situation. The masculine mentality is the complexity of the situation is boiled down into some simple group of observations that may or may not actually represent the situation. And so I am realizing that it's not just my mindset that's feminine. If I don't walk in an elegant feminine way, my hips lock up, my back hurts, and the number of hours I'm working in restaurants right now, that can't happen. So I'm prancing around the kitchen. I'm walking home. I would imagine if you take a picture of the way that I walk now and, you know, have it be far away, I would look like a woman walking. And I realize that puts me quite literally at risk, because we live in a climate where there's so much crazy hatred flying around. And hatred's hard to explain. It's easier to explain desperation. And I do believe that it is desperation that leads to hatred. And so a very long time ago, probably around that same age, sort of 14, 15, 16, I was training as a junior lifeguard. And I think it was completely coincidental that around that time, something happened in the news, and my lifeguarding teacher told me this story. It was an NFL football player who drowned trying to save a group of three young women, and they survived and he did not. And I don't remember the details, but my junior lifeguard teacher, I was not actually ever a real lifeguard, I just got some training in it. He said he gave us this really interesting approach, which is on the surface incredibly manipulative, but also incredibly interesting. He said, if someone is in the water asking for help, don't ever jump in after them. Don't ever do it, because they'll kill you. They'll kill you because they will pull you under and there's nothing you can do. They will see you as a means of survival, and you are more likely not to come out of that than they are. So throw a rope, throw a buoy, or use this incredibly manipulative technique, which is jump in the water, say you're there to help them, and then swim back to shore. or swim back to the boat. Just wait for them to come within 6 feet of you so they cannot touch you, and then swim backwards. And I thought to myself, that's so mean. But here's the interesting thing. Most people who do not believe they can swim do not actually know that they can swim enough for the situation. And it's the panic that kills them. And so if they see you within reach, they have something to go for. They have a reason to move a certain way. And as like if they can get to you and you can get to safety, you can actually bring them to safety. And I think about this idea that it is not hard to understand why anyone would interpret the American economy as a place where it is impossible to make an honest living. Having parachuted out of the white collar work and working in restaurants for an hourly amount that is around or below the minimum wage of some states in this, you know, great US of A, I can attest to the fact that it is really, really hard to make an honest living, especially because everywhere I go, people say, you know, this is easy. They want to cut corners. There's such a lack of interest in doing a good job and having something you can be proud of. And I love to cook. I love to cook. I kind of resent the strange ownership dynamic of having no interest in giving people a better experience as a means of selling more food. It's weird how much money I think is being left on the table just through a lack of imagination. But if people don't think they can make an honest living, they become desperate enough to want a group to scapegoat. In my opinion, it's the necessity of some form of me better than you economics that has allowed racism and misogyny and homophobia and transphobia to persist in the American culture, even though so many people are working so hard to rise us all out of that as a country. But if you need a group of people to be below you, because you need to know that somebody has it worse off than you, then there won't ever be a time where there not is not some phobia and some group to pick on as part of American culture. So it's a long shot to say, you know, we got to fix the way people think about economics to get over transphobia for good, but I actually think it's true. But I don't view people who hate people like me or hate people like, you know, the people who I'm friends with or the people I work with who are not white. I view those people as extremely desperate. I view them as those three young women that murdered an NFL player. They didn't want to murder him. They just needed to survive. And I think we've twisted hatred and hate crimes into the worst of the worst inexcusable, and they are that. That's fine. But it's worth understanding that the psychology of hatred has a lot to do with desperation. And desperation meets another interesting factor, which is the extreme desire to just have something to hold on to that makes sense. And I think gender transition just rocks the boat and rattles the cage of the way the world is and the way the world makes sense. I mean, if you need to have faith in the sidewalk you walk on to get from place to place, and you psychologically really need to believe that it will remain under your feet and there will not be a sinkhole, and you have so much on your mind, it's a busy world, you can't think about whether or not the sidewalk is going to hold your weight. If there is actually a sinkhole, which there is once in a while, by the way, it's when moisture gets in and washes away the soil and it's no longer structurally capable of supporting a concrete sidewalk and the sidewalk falls down. This does actually happen once in a while. I think the mindset people are in with claiming that transgenderism isn't real or claiming that, you know, it shouldn't be acknowledged or it should be eradicated. You know, they call it a lifestyle, whatever. The analogy I would use here is it's as if you were walking along the sidewalk and the person ahead of you fell into a crumbling sidewalk sinkhole and was asking for help to get out. And they're saying, help, I'm in the sinkhole, you know, help. And you're saying, no, you're not. No. No, I refuse to believe that you have fallen in a sinkhole, because if I believe that, I'll never leave my house again. If I acknowledge that there is a such thing as an inconsistent sidewalk, I mean, man, like, there used to only be two sidewalks, right? There was the sidewalk on the right and the sidewalk on the left. And now you're telling me there's sinkholes and sometimes they fall down. I can't deal with this. I'm not going to help you. I'm going to leave you there to die. That's the kind of thing that is brewing the sort of transgender hatred, is this idea that if we don't clearly define two genders, you know, we somehow will lose out on the ability to function. And realistically, unless you are going to date someone romantically, there is very little in society that should be different between genders. Unless you are someone's medical doctor or would like to be their future romantic partner, and you should make sure they would like to be your romantic partner too, gender is actually none of anyone else's business. So the idea that the world ends if you don't define the two, and then also the idea that it's none of your business, very much in conflict. But I would like to talk about the reason why the person in that former story may be so obsessed with not seeing what's in front of them and making sure they can tell themselves a story of consistency. I've been noticing that there is a certain brand of credit card machine at a whole bunch of grocery and retail stores that I hate so much. They have chosen to put the chip card reader above the pin pad, and they want you to turn the card upside down to put it in there. And I hate them for this. Because when I pay for something, I don't want to think about how the chip card reader works. It's like, this is supposed to be the kind of thing that's just on the way to me, like getting out of the store with my stuff and getting on with my day. And I've watched a number of people, and the first time I had to use one, I put it in wrong like four times. It was a whole thing. I was like, this can't be one more thing in the world that's just changing too quickly. Like, where's the consistency? I don't get it. I've watched people ahead of me struggle with these machines as well. And it's always so embarrassing. You feel kind of, they feel kind of stupid when they put their card in, and then they're like talking to the retail person who's probably watched 15 different people in a row try to figure this thing out. And so if you're wondering why there is such an insane rise in really crotchety conservatism and a really emphatic, God damn it, why is even the definition of a man and a woman different now? I think there's actually a realistic level of compassion for how screwed uply different the world actually is compared to how it should be. I mean, there should have been regulations that said credit card machines work this way. I get that you're a private business, but you don't get to confuse the world. Same thing with car headlights. I don't know why fancy cars have funny brake lights. Like, it's a cool car, yeah, whatever. But do I need to think about that while I'm driving to figure out whether or not your brake lights are on or if that is actually your blinker? And so I think that you have two main factors in transgender hatred. One is groups that are getting hated on are shifting because they're getting bigger and more economic power. And America has an addiction to having someone below them. At least we're not those people, is the most toxic, you know, side of America. And then I think the other is there generally is so much change, too much change. And the idea of a gender transition, it shakes something that people thought they could count on. And I have compassion for that. I don't have compassion for anyone who looks at me and says that their sense of defining the world is more important than my well-being when they're talking about me. Like, as if me coming out as trans feminine is a big deal to them. Yeah, fuck you. Like, this is my life. I'm going to go through a lot because of it. And the amount that it will cost you is so minimal that you can deal. But that being said, there is so much about the world that is confusing. And I think one of the contributing factors of that is that the scientists are just so incredibly good at making sure everything is inconclusive. I mean, I was watching this video yesterday and it was like, so we took these brain scans and those brain scans, and it was like an incredibly engaging video for like 20 minutes of all the things they had done. And the entire time the message was, and it's inconclusive. I've seen enough stories online, and I've known enough people who are transgender some trans masculine, mostly trans feminine, to know that transgenderism is real. And I have read people reporting, I don't read scientific documents well, I don't research science, and a lot of it's locked up in like university subscription journal stuff anyway. I can't even read it if I wanted to. But there have been many, many reports of a lot of study that's like, yeah, we're definitely finding evidence of brains of one gender and body of another. And there's a lot of clinical information about how wonderful transition therapy is for people's well-being. I mean, if you just look at pictures of people, you know, a few years before they did hormone therapy and then a few years after, they look better. Like, you can really tell that it makes them better. And so at the end of the day, no matter how inconsistent the world is and how inconvenient it is to you to realize that you relied on the definition between genders, even though it's none of your business, the well-being of the person who has made the decision to transition is way more important than whatever you're dealing with. I'm sorry to say that, but it is the truth. But what I would really like to talk about is, firstly, the difference between men and women, complexity and simplicity, should really be celebrated. I mean, if you don't like a complicated diet, kind of like not really meat and potatoes, but you like the similar kinds of foods, you do you, whether you're a man or a woman. If you like complexity, you do you. If you're like me, and the need to fit into a gender role is causing you enough pain that you actually need to go through the process of switching sides, you do you. And if you really don't want to do that, if you want to advocate for women's rights and do or do not want to shave your legs, you do you as well. But let's all have compassion for how unnecessarily inconsistent fundamental things have become that I believe have actually created a crazy rise, crazy, crazy rise in, you know, very impractical conservatism. And then also, I'm a real big believer in the understanding that hatred is always born of desperation. And we have really a lot of territory to go to before, you know, entire generations of Americans believe in an honest workplace. So with that being said, I have chosen the name Madison, which ironically is my birth middle name. Now, here's the funny thing. So I'm coming out as a transgender woman at 42 years old. However, I changed my name from Stephen Madison to Firecrow Silver Knight in 2003 to be a rock star. And whether or not the name Stephen had some friction in my mind because of gender in 2003, I don't know. But my name on my license and passport and everything has been Firecrow Silver Knight for a very long time. And when I moved back to Iowa and started working in kitchens, I did not want to go with the name Firecrow in kitchens because everyone had shortened that to fire for short, and that means cook something. Fire the French fries, fire the burger. So I chose Stephen initially in the first few kitchens. And I was like, well, you know, I'm going by, you know, my birth first name. And I've since changed that to Madison, which will be my male and then female name as I transition. So my name is Madison Silver Knight, and it has been great to share all of this with you. I hope it was balanced and informative, and I will record another one of these very soon.